Chapter 7. We had patience. We might have found a very fine river a little farther north. However, we kept our frigate on float by the help of two great poles, which we fastened into the ground to moor her, like poles, and the little weak ropes, which, as I said, we had made of matting, served us well enough to make the vessel fast. As soon as we had viewed the country a little, got fresh water, and furnished ourselves with some victuals, which we found very scarce here, we went on board again with our stores. All we got for provision was some fowls that we killed, and a kind of wild buffalo or bull, very small, but good meat. I say, having got these things on board, we resolved to sail along the coast, which lay NNE, till we found some creek or river, that we might run up into the country, or some town or people, for we had reason enough to know the place was inhabited, because we several times saw fires in the night, and smoke in the day, every way at a distance from us. At length we came to a very large bay, and in it several little creeks, or rivers emptying themselves into the sea, and we ran boldly into the first creek we came at, where, seeing some huts and wild people about them on the shore, we ran our vessel into a little cove on the north side of the creek, and held up a long pole, with a white bit of cloth on it, for a signal of peace to them. We found they understood us presently, for they came flocking to us, men, women, and children, most of them, of both sexes, stark naked. At first they stood wondering and staring at us, as if we had been monsters, and as if they had been frighted. But we found they inclined to be familiar with us afterwards. The first thing we did to try them, was, we held up our hands to our mouths, as if we were to drink, signifying that we wanted water. This they understood presently, and three of their women and two boys ran away up the land, and came back in about half a quarter of an hour, with several pots, made of earth, pretty enough, and baked, I suppose, in the sun. These they brought us full of water, and set them down near the seashore, and there left them, going back a little, that we might fetch them, which we did. Some time after this, they brought us roots and herbs, and some fruits which I cannot remember, and gave us. But as we had nothing to give them, we found them, not so free as the people in Madagascar were. However, our cutler went to work, and, as he had saved some iron out of the wreck of the ship, he made abundance of toys, birds, dogs, pins, hooks, and rings, and we helped to file them, and make them bright for him, and when we gave them some of these, they brought us all sorts of provisions they had, such as goats, hogs, and cows, and we got victuals enough. We were now landed upon the continent of Africa, the most desolate, desert, and inhospitable country in the world, even Greenland and Nova Zembla itself not excepted, with this difference only, that even the worst part of it, we found inhabited, though, taking the nature and quality of some of the inhabitants, it might have been much better to us, if there had been none. And, to add to the exclamation I am making on the nature of the place, it was here that we took one of the rashest, and wildest, and most desperate resolutions that ever was taken by man, or any number of men, in the world. This was, to travel overland through the heart of the country, from the coast of Mozambique, on the East Ocean, to the coast of Angola or Guinea, on the western or Atlantic Ocean, a continent of land of at least 1,800 miles, in which journey we had excessive heats to support, unpassable deserts to go over, no carriages, camels, or beasts of any kind to carry our baggage, innumerable numbers of wild and ravenous beasts to encounter with, such as lions, leopards, tigers, lizards, and elephants. We had the equinoctial line to pass under, and, consequently, were in the very center of the torrid zone. We had nations of savages to encounter with, barbarous and brutish to the last degree, hunger and thirst to struggle with, and, in one word, terrors enough to have daunted the stoutest hearts that ever were placed in cases of flesh and blood. Yet, fearless of all ease, we resolved to adventure, and accordingly made such preparations for our journey as the place we were in would allow us, and such as our little experience of the country seemed to dictate to us. It had been some time already that we had been used to tread barefooted upon the rocks, the gravel, the grass, and the sand on the shore. But as we found the worst thing for our feet was the walking or traveling on the dry burning sands within the country, so we provided ourselves with a sort of shoes, made of the skins of wild beasts, with the hair inward, and being dried in the sun, the outsides were thick and hard, and would last a great while. In short, as I called them, so I think the term very proper still, we made us gloves for our feet, and we found them very convenient and very comfortable. We conversed with some of the natives of the country, who were friendly enough. What tongue they spoke I do not yet pretend to know. We talked as far as we could make them understand us, not only about our provisions, but also about our undertaking, and asked them what country lay that way, pointing west with our hands. They told us, but little to our purpose, only we thought, by all their discourse, that there were people to be found, of one sort or other, everywhere, that there were many great rivers, many lions and tigers, elephants, and furious wild cats which in the end we found to be civet cats, and the like. When we asked them if anyone had ever traveled that way, they told us yes, some had gone to where the sun sleeps, meaning to the west, but they could not tell us who they were. When we asked for some to guide us, they shrunk up their shoulders as Frenchmen do when they are afraid to undertake a thing. When we asked them about the lions and wild creatures, they laughed, and let us know that they would do us no hurt, and directed us to a good way indeed to deal with them, and that was to make some fire, which would always fright them away, and so indeed we found it. Upon these encouragements we resolved upon our journey, and many considerations put us upon it, which, had the thing itself been practicable, we were not so much to blame for as it might otherwise be supposed. I will name some of them, not to make the account too tedious. First, we were perfectly destitute of means to work about our own deliverance any other way. We were on shore in a place perfectly remote from all European navigation, so that we could never think of being relieved and fetched off by any of our own countrymen in that part of the world. Secondly, if we had adventured to have sailed on along the coast of Mozambique and the desolate shores of Africa to the north, till we came to the Red Sea, all we could hope for there was to be taken by the Arabs, and be sold for slaves to the Turks, which to all of us was little better than death. We could not build anything of a vessel that would carry us over the great Arabian Sea to India, nor could we reach the Cape de Bona Esperanza, the winds being too variable, and the sea in that latitude too tempestuous. But we all knew, if we could cross this continent of land, we might reach some of the great rivers that run into the Atlantic Ocean, and that, on the banks of any of those rivers, we might there build us canoes which would carry us down, if it were thousands of miles, so that we could want nothing but food, of which we were assured we might kill sufficient with our guns. And to add to the satisfaction of our deliverance, we concluded we might, every one of us, get a quantity of gold, which, if we came safe, would infinitely recompense us for our toil. I cannot say that in all our consultations I ever began to enter into the weight and merit of any enterprise we went upon till now. My view before was, as I thought, very good, viz., that we should get into the Arabian Gulf, or the mouth of the Red Sea, and waiting for some vessel passing or repassing there, of which there is plenty, have seized upon the first we came at by force, and not only have enriched ourselves with her cargo, but have carried ourselves to what part of the world we had pleased. But when they came to talk to me of a march of 2,000 or 3,000 miles on foot, of wandering in deserts among lions and tigers, I confess my blood ran chill, and I used all the arguments I could to persuade them against it. But they were all positive, and I might as well have held my tongue, So I submitted, and told them I would keep to our first law, to be governed by the majority, and we resolved upon our journey. The first thing we did was to take an observation, and see whereabouts in the world we were, which we did, and found we were in the latitude of 12 degrees 35 minutes south of the line. The next thing was to look on the charts, and see the coast of the country we aimed at, which we found to be from 8 to 11 degrees south latitude. If we went for the coast of Angola, or in 12 to 29 degrees north latitude, if we made for the river Niger, and the coast of Guinea. Our aim was for the coast of Angola, which, by the charts we had, lying very near the same latitude we were then in, our course thither was due west, and as we were assured we should meet with rivers, we doubted not, but that by their help we might ease our journey, especially if we could find means to cross the Great Lake, or inland sea, which the natives call Kolmukoa, out of which it is said the river Nile has its source or beginning. But we reckoned without our host, as you will see in the sequel of our story. The next thing we had to consider was, how to carry our baggage, which we were first of all determined not to travel without. Neither indeed was it possible for us to do so, for even our ammunition, which was absolutely necessary to us, and on which our subsistence, I mean for food, as well as our safety, and particularly our defense against wild beasts and wild men, depended, I say, even our ammunition was a load too heavy for us to carry in a country where the heat was such that we should be load enough for ourselves. We inquired in the country, and found there was no beast of burthen known among them, that is to say, neither horses or mules, or asses, camels, or dromedaries. The only creature they had was a kind of buffalo, or tame bull, such a one as we had killed, and that some of these they had brought so to their hand, that they taught them to go and come with their voices, as they called them to them, or sent them from them, that they made them carry burthens, and particularly that they would swim over rivers and lakes upon them, the creatures swimming very high and strong in the water. But we understood nothing of the management of guiding such a creature, or how to bind a burthen upon them, and this last part of our consultation puzzled us extremely. At last I proposed a method for them, which, after some consideration, they found very convenient, and this was, to quarrel with some of the Negro natives, take 10 or 12 of them prisoners, and binding them as slaves, cause them to travel with us, and make them carry our baggage, which I alleged would be convenient and useful many ways as well, to show us the way, as to converse with other natives for us. This counsel was not accepted at first, but the natives soon gave them reason to approve it, and also gave them an opportunity to put it in practice. For, as our little traffic with the natives was hitherto upon the faith of their first kindness, we found some knavery among them at last, for having bought some cattle of them for our toys, which, as I said, our cutler had contrived, one of our men differing with his chapmen, truly they huffed him in their manner, and, keeping the things he had offered them for the cattle, made their fellows drive away the cattle before his face, and laugh at him. Our man crying out loud of this violence, and calling to some of us who were not far off, the Negro he was dealing with threw a lance at him, which came so true, that, if he had not with great agility jumped aside, and held up his hand also, to turn the lance as it came, it had struck through his body, and, as it was, it wounded him in the arm, at which the man, enraged, took up his fusee, and shot the Negro through the heart. The others that were near him, and all those that were with us at a distance, were so terribly frighted, first, at the flash of fire, secondly, at the noise, and thirdly, at seeing their countrymen killed, that they stood like men stupid and amazed, at first, for some time, but after they were a little recovered from their fright, one of them, at a good distance from us, set up a sudden screaming noise, which, it seems, is the noise they make when they go to fight, and all the rest, understanding what he meant, answered him, and ran together to the place where he was, and we, not knowing what it meant, stood still, looking upon one another like a parcel of fools. But we were presently undeceived. For, in 2 or 3 minutes more, we heard the screaming, roaring noise go on from one place to another, through all their little towns, nay, even over the creek to the other side. And, on a sudden, we saw a naked multitude running from all parts to the place where the first man began it, as to a rendezvous. And, in less than an hour, I believe there was near 500 of them gotten together, armed some with bows and arrows, but most with lances, which they throw at a good distance, so nicely that they will strike a bird flying. We had but a very little time for consultation, for the multitude was increasing every moment, and I verily believe, if we had stayed long, they would have been 10,000 together in a little time. We had nothing to do, therefore, but to fly to our ship or bark, where indeed we could have defended ourselves very well, or to advance, and try what a volley or two of small shot would do for us. We resolved immediately upon the latter, depending upon it, that the fire and terror of our shot would soon put them to flight, so we drew up all in a line, and marched boldly up to them. They stood ready to meet us, depending, I suppose, to destroy us all with their lances, but before we came near enough for them to throw their lances, we halted, and, standing at a good distance from one another, to stretch our line as far as we could, we gave them a salute with our shot, which, besides what we wounded, that we knew not of, knocked 16 of them down upon the spot, and 3 more were so lamed, that they fell about 20 or 30 yards from them. As soon as we had fired, they set up the horridest yell, or howling, partly raised by those that were wounded, and partly by those that pitied, and condoled the bodies they saw lie dead, that I never heard anything like it before or since. We stood stock still, after we had fired, to load our guns again, and finding they did not stir from the place we fired among them again, we killed about 9 of them at the second fire. But as they did not stand so thick as before, all our men did not fire, 7 of us being ordered to reserve our charge, and to advance, as soon as the other had fired, while the rest loaded again, of which I shall speak again presently. As soon as we had fired the second volley, we shouted as loud as we could, and the 7 men advanced upon them, and, coming about 20 yards nearer, fired again, and those that were behind, having loaded again with all expedition, followed. But when they saw us advance, they ran screaming away, as if they were bewitched. When we came up to the field of battle, we saw a great number of bodies lying upon the ground, many more than we could suppose were killed or wounded, nay, more than we had bullets in our pieces when we fired, and we could not tell what to make of it. But at length we found how it was, viz., that they were frighted out of all manner of sense, nay, I do believe several of those that were really dead, were frighted to death, and had no wound about them. Of those that were thus frighted, as I have said, several of them, as they recovered themselves, came and worshipped us, taking us for gods or devils, I know not which, nor did it much matter to us. Some kneeling, some throwing themselves flat on the ground, made 1,000 antic gestures, but all with tokens of the most profound submission. It presently came into my head, that we might now, by the law of arms, take as many prisoners as we would, and make them travel with us, and carry our baggage. As soon as I proposed it, our men were all of my mind. And accordingly we secured about 60 lusty young fellows, and let them know they must go with us, which they seemed very willing to do. But the next question we had among ourselves was, how we should do to trust them, for we found the people, not like those of Madagascar, but fierce, revengeful, and treacherous, for which reason we were sure that we should have no service from them, but that of mere slaves. No subjection that would continue any longer than the fear of us was upon them, nor any labor but by violence. Before I go any farther, I must hint to the reader that from this time forward I began to enter a little more seriously into the circumstance I was in, and concerned myself more in the conduct of our affairs. For though my comrades were all older men, yet I began to find them void of counsel, or, as I now call it, presence of mind, when they came to the execution of a thing. The first occasion I took to observe this was in their late engagement with the natives, when, though they had taken a good resolution to attack them and fire upon them, yet, when they had fired the first time and found that the Negroes did not run as they expected, their hearts began to fail, and I am persuaded, if their bark had been near hand, they would every man have run away. Upon this occasion I began to take upon me a little to hearten them up, and to call upon them to load again, and give them another volley, telling them that I would engage, if they would be ruled by me, I'd make the Negroes run fast enough. I found this heartened them, and therefore, when they fired a second time, I desired them to reserve some of their shot for an attempt by itself, as I mentioned above. Having fired a second time, I was indeed forced to command, as I may call it. Now, Seigneurs, said I, let us give them a cheer. So I opened my throat, and shouted three times, as our English sailors do on like occasions. And now follow me, said I to the seven that had not fired, and I'll warrant you, we will make work with them, and so it proved indeed. For, as soon as they saw us coming, away they ran, as above. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.